The Gemara in Baba Batra Daf Ayin Gimel. The Gemara in Baba Batra Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. It has a list of stories that happened to Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Rabba Bar Bar Chana. And they're fascinating stories. They're seemingly unbelievable stories. They're just literally not believable. And you can debate from here till tomorrow whether they're to be taken literally or not literally. But either way, they are to be taken seriously. The Gemara chose to quote these stories. I want to read to you one story. I'm going to try to do it slowly. Zimnechada. One time. Hava ka azlinan bisafinta. One time we were going on a boat. These are really fascinating stories. One time, says Rabba Bar Bar Chana, we were traveling on a boat. Vichazinan and we saw Hahuk Vara. We saw some sort of fish. Diyatvele Chalta. We were traveling on a boat and we saw this fish. Diyatvele Chalta, and on the fish had sand. Chol. The fish had sand. On the back of the fish had sand. I'm sorry. Diyat v'leichalta agabe. And it had sand on the back, on its back. V'kodach agama iluye. And there was grass growing out of the sand on the back of this huge fish. This is Rabba Bar Bar Chana. I told you it's fascinating. We were traveling on a boat, we saw a fish, and on the back of the fish there was sand and grass was growing on it. Says Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Savrinan Yabeshtahi. Savrinan Yabeshtahi. Means? We thought it was?
Dry.
Yafeh, dry what? Dry land. It was so big we thought it was land. Maybe it was a small island. Visalkinan. And we left our boat to go on this island. V'afinan, we cooked. Ubashlinan agabe. And we baked and we cooked on the back of this fish. Ladies, this is a Gemara in Talmud Bavli. Shas. Torah Shebal Peh. We got off the boat and we cooked and we baked on the back of this fish. Vikad Cham Gabe, and when the fish got hot, it hapich, it turned over. This, we didn't think it was a fish, but this fish turned over. V'ilav dehava mikrava safinta. And had we not been close to the boat, hava tavinan, we would have drowned. That is the story. Rabba Bar Bar Chana is traveling. He travels a lot. And he's traveling. He sees this island. They get off the boat. They get on the island. They cook. They bake. And this island all of a sudden turns out to be a fish. And it turns us over. And the last line, had we not been near the boat, we would have drowned. It could have happened, it could have not happened, but it certainly should be taken literally. And the literally goes like this. But it happened or didn't happen, but it should be taken seriously. And the seriously goes like this. Very frequently in life, we think that we are on solid ground and we live our lives regularly. And something happens that literally changes our reality in a second. And in this case, God forbid, it could really change for the worse. We could drown. And the lesson is not so much to avoid those fish or to avoid those islands. The lesson is to make sure you're near the boat and to make sure that you have solid ground to go to, because if not, chalila v'chas, a person can drown. It happens in life all the time, unfortunately. Very painful upheavals. That's the word. Upheavals. In our lives. And we think we're drowning. It's not so much avoiding the upheavals. It's what do you do once you're in the water? Does a person drown? Or does a person get back to the boat? Okay? That's a message. It happens. And it happens in this week's Parsha. It happens in this week's Parsha to at least two of the brothers. Tanakh in general is full of stories where people think they are on solid ground, and before you know it, the whole world changes. The death of Sarai Imenu, the brothers who leave this kind of strict second-in-command, stay at a hotel, open their packages, oh my gosh, their entire world turns over. Or, the next time, they go back, they bring Binyamin, finally we made it out, we go to a hotel, what do I know, who are these people chasing me? That evil king again? There's no cup? And they open the cup, they open the bag, and the cup is there. Lives are over. Right? We think that we're on solid ground, and we're not. And another example is Eli HaKohen. Eli HaKohen, there's a war going on. He sends the Aron, and he, in a heartbeat, he hears about the death of his two sons, and he hears about the... What did he hear about? Also the capturing Yafeh of the Aron. His life turns around. Well, a very similar thing happens in this week's Parsha to at least two brothers. Yaakov Avinu has the luxury, and I say that really, to die, to know that he's dying. It sounds like a terrible thing, but he actually davened for that so that he could give a bracha to his children. And Yaakov assembles his children and his grandchildren for his last bracha, his last message. And he tells people, B'chayev Arech Yisrael, he tells them to Ephraim and Menashe. He tells Reuven B'choriata, Kochi V'reishit Oni. Reuven walks out with a big smile on his face. Ephraim and Menashe walk out with a big smile on their face. Yehuda walks out with a smile. Everybody walks out with a smile. You're getting a bracha from the father, the patriarch. What bracha do you have for me? And Shimon and Levi, their partners, they walk in together, and their world turns over, turns upside down. Shimon and Levi receive really, really what is clear is a painful rebuke. Rashi tells us here that that Yaakov refers to Shimon and Levi's concerted effort to kill Yosef, or their attack on Shechem that they shouldn't have done, and he delivers a painful rebuke. Shimon v'Levi achim. Shimon and Levi are brothers. Klei chamas mecheiroteihem. Their weapons are instruments of crime. That's the way Rashi understands it, at least. They're at home with their instruments of crime. Bisodam, this is their father talking. He's going to die any minute. Bisodam al tavo nafshi. Let my soul not enter their plot, their strategy. Bikhalam al techad kivodi. Let my honor not unite with their kehilah, with their group. Ki, the apam hargu ish. They killed people. with anger. Uvir tzonam ikru shor, and they maimed the bull. Might be Yosef. Zayin, arur apam ki az, their rage, their anger should be cursed because it is strong. Ve'evratam ki kashata, and also their anger should be cursed because it's cruel. Achal keim b'Yaakov, va'afitzeim b'Yisrael. I'm going to scatter them. Their world just turned upside down. Why couldn't I get a bracha like Menashe, like Ephraim? My nephews, for crying out loud, they're not even my brothers. Reuven gets, everybody gets, but we look at what we get. Shimon and Levi were mamish brothers, and they did everything together. In Vayeshev, for example, when Yosef approaches them, the Torah says in Pasuk in Perek Lamed Vav, in Perek Lamed Zayin, Vayomru Ish El Echav. Who's it talking about? Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi were brothers. Who did Shechem? Shimon and Levi. Brothers. And they received the exact same, simultaneously, the exact same negative message. And you have to imagine these two brothers growing up together and partners in crime, literally. How did they react? But you'd think that if they've been brothers up until now, so they're both going to walk out of there identically. Such is not the case. This is the first place that they split, and their histories are changed forever. It's not a matter of whether your island is going to overturn. It's a matter of whether you're close to the boat. It's not a matter of whether you're going to get a negative bracha, or a negative message, or a musr shmooze from a father. It's what do you do with that message? And Shimon and Levi could not have reacted differently. They and their shvatim. Let's start with Shimon. Shimon, it seems, walks out of this meeting and he says, all is lost. It seems at face value that it's really impossible to recover from such a negative message. First of all, we hear almost nothing from Shimon, the person, nor the Shevet after this experience. They do indeed get dispersed. They do indeed get scattered. Achal came by Yisrael. Achal came by Yaakov. Vafitzeim by Yisrael. Absolutely comes true with Shimon. They go from being the third biggest Shevet in Parshat Bamidbar Perek Aleph to being the smallest by the time the second census is taken in Perek Chavav in Pinchas. Yeah, they're dispersed. They don't hold on to the core. They leave. The drop in 25 prakim from the third largest Shevet to the smallest. Five Shvatim actually reduced in numbers, but percentage-wise, they drop more than anybody else. They drop more than 60%. The next biggest drop is Ephraim. I did the math. The next biggest drop is Ephraim. Percentage-wise, they drop 20%. So Shimon is the leader in failure, at least in this area. By the time they enter Eretz Yisrael, if you looked at a map, anybody know where Shevet Shimon is located? It's hard to find. It's subsumed. You're going to say?
Inside Yehuda.
Yeah, Femeod. It's inside Yehuda, Liat. It's inside Yehuda. They don't even have their own borders. They're within Shevet Yehuda. They're subsumed. They're never even called Shevet Shimon. When it's Yehuda versus Yisrael, it's Yehuda and Shimon. It's just that we don't know that because they're so insignificant. All of the Shvatim produce Shoftim. In Sefer Shoftim, except in Reuven and Gad, because Reuven and Gad were where? They were on the other side of the Yarden, and take a guess, Shimon. There isn't a Shofet that comes from Shimon. At the end of the Torah, if you open your Tanakh, you don't have to Vezot HaBracha, what is the Bracha that Shimon gets from Moshe Rabbeinu? What is the Bracha that Shimon gets from Moshe Rabbeinu? Can anybody tell me what it is? He doesn't get one. We go from Shimon being a full-fledged member of Klal Yisrael to literally from this point to relative insignificance. His island overturned, and he chose to walk away dejectedly. Now let's turn to Shevet Levi. To Levi the person, and to Shevet Levi. Levi, on the other hand, seems to react to this rebuke in the absolute opposite direction. He says, I'm going to take this Musar, and I'm going to turn my life around. I'm going to swim to the boat, and I'm going to survive. He becomes the progenitor of some of the most important leaders in Jewish history. Not Shimon, but Levi. Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, Pinchas. Shevet Levi goes on to serve in the Mikdash. Shevet Levi goes on to serve in the Mishkan. They too are dispersed. Achal came by Yaakov, v'afitzein by Israel. Sure, that came true for them also. They are dispersed, but they're in a positive way. They receive the 48 cities of Shevet Levi in order to teach Torah. As Moshe tells us in Vezot HaBracha, Yoru Mishpatecha LeYaakov, V'toratecha LeYisrael. Sure, Shevet Levi is the scattered. You know why? Because I want you to be scattered. I don't want you to stay in your little corner, your little Dalet Amot. I need you to scatter. I need Shevet Levi in the north and in the south and in the east and in the west and in the villages and in the cities. I need him in 48 cities. Shimon gets scattered to who knows where. They're lost, so to speak. Levi doesn't get lost. They get scattered for the opposite reason, to inspire Yoru Mishpatecha LeYisrael, LeYaakov V'toratecha LeYisrael. So the black and white contrast between this overturned island, between the way Shimon reacts and the way Levi reacts, from that moment until the end of Tanakh, is, or at least until the end of the Chumash, and we said later also, is remarkable. And so I think that it's important to recognize that there are islands that overturn. But I also think it's important to recognize that's going to happen. I tell people that where I live, if I turn one way, it's a dead end, so I can't go one way. The only other way out of my house, the only way I can go anywhere, the only way I can drive anywhere, is by going over a speed bump. Some speed bump. There's no way for me to drive without a speed bump. Life is not about avoiding the speed bumps. It's about recognizing that they're coming, bracing yourself, and moving on. As opposed to always trying to dodge the hard stuff. Go to the island. Rabbi Barbachana traveled all the time. But stay near the boat. Stay near the boat. I wanted to tell you a story about one of my islands that overturned. I have not been telling the story for very long. I decided a couple years ago to tell the story. It's a personal story. But I tell it anyway because I think it's educational. And you'll tell me if you... It is a personal story, and I only tell it in front of audiences that I feel comfortable with. And I don't believe, aside from my children, I don't believe I've ever said it publicly other than from this very position. I don't believe, because it's a very personal story. And it goes something like this. I'll tell it quickly. When I was in elementary school, I had a good friend. Eliza, where's Eliza? Damsky. Oh, she's not. Eliza Damsky's father and I went to elementary school together. Don't ask him these questions. I was really, really, really not a good student. I mean, that's the bottom line. And the regular occurrence of parent-teacher conferences where he's a nice guy, he's a good boy, he's got a lot of potential, don't say spunk, a lot of potential, but he's not living up to his potential. A homework was a suggestion. In fourth grade, anybody go to Hillel Torah? You went to Hillel Torah? Fourth grade president's project, Mrs. Golub? Oh, okay. See that? She's still there? She's still there? She could still be there. She's not there anymore. Fourth grade president project. So we had a project to do fourth... So you gotta do... I really wanted Jimmy Carter. He was the president at the time. I was gonna do Bush, but, I don't think he was born. You know, you wanted to get Truman, you wanted to get Lincoln, George Washington, of course. You're going to get George Washington. Who gets those? It's presented in front of all the parents. So you got to give the good students the good presidents. You know what I mean? George Washington goes to so-and-so. I said, you know, Nixon, come on, Nixon has his own story. He goes there. I was not a good student. I got Millard Fillmore. The truth is, I take it back. I got Zachary Taylor and Millard Fillmore. I think Zachary Taylor died in office, like 11 days after he got into office, right? So Mrs. Golub said, here, you take two. You're really special. That was my life. And I will tell you the truth. Every single year, I said, this is the year. This is the year. This is the year. Sometimes it lasted a month. Sometimes it lasted 2.5 minutes. But this is the year I'm going to get my, you know, notebook. I'm going to do homework. This is the year. And it just... Some of you probably were not like this. Maybe you have someone in your family you know like this. It was really uncool. It was just, to say the least, it was painful. Every year, this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. I was never mean, but I just was not a student. Okay, my father, some of you saw him today, Baruch Hashem, got a job with the federal government. He became a lawyer with the federal government. So we move, after seventh grade, to Silver Spring. And we go, and it's a brand new school. Now it's called BHA. Wasn't called that then, but I went there and I said, this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. It didn't work. Okay, tried, but you know, it's a new school and socially and, oh my gosh, and it was really painful. Okay, the decision was made to go to a school that nobody went to here called the Yeshiva of Greater Washington. I went to the Yeshiva of Greater Washington and I said, okay, this is the year. This is the year. This is the year! I'm going to do it, and it's ninth grade already, for crying out loud. Bar mitzvah's over. I mean, we're going. I go into the yeshiva, go to Washington, my first day of school. And I was really not a good student. I said to myself, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to do it this year. This is it. This is the year. This is the year I'm going to do it. And I go to school. Starts with davening. I survived davening. We're good with davening. In the yeshiva there, we had breakfast. I had breakfast. We're good with breakfast. First shiur, Navi, Rabbi Drillman. I'm saying his name, Lishvach, apt, for the end of the story. Rabbi Drillman. And first period of ninth grade. I mean, we're doing this. We're doing this. And he starts saying the rules of class. Remember the story, guys? You remember the story? Oh, okay. It's very painful. It's a painful story to say. First day, Rabbi Drillman is going through directions about the rules in school, the rules in class. You gotta come on time, you gotta bring your Navi, you gotta bring a notebook, you gotta bring a pen, you can't talk. And one of his rules was that if you have garbage on your desk, don't get up in the middle. It's like one of the rules. Don't get up in the middle of class. But after class, walk over to the garbage can and throw it out. We don't need everybody getting up and down. And I elbow my friend sitting next to me. If you say, oh no, you're right. I elbow my friend sitting next to me and I go like this. You know, he said you can't get up, so. Rabbi Drillman, he's right. We gotta set the tone. These are freshmen, first year yeshiva guys. He sees me go. You. He didn't even know my name, I don't think. You. Get out. I got kicked out of class in the first 10 minutes of high school. I had been there before. I couldn't believe it. If you talk about islands overturning... Oh my God. I mean, it was terrible. He said, you gotta go to the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Einemer. Yes, that face is what I had. I mean, I didn't look like her, but I did make, you know, remember Rabbi Einemer? Allah Bashalom. Rabbi Einemer was, when you're a ninth grade boy whose voice is cracking, Rabbi Einemer was a 12-foot giant who could barely fit into a room. So, booming, loud voice. Head hit the ceiling. I'm exaggerating slightly, but you can... To go to the Rosh Yeshiva. No, he said go to the office. I'm sorry. He said go to the office. What? You remember him? The long white beard. You remember him?
Oh, yeah.
The long white beard. He said go to the office. I said, okay. First thing you do, I'm not trying to teach you any lessons, ladies. First thing you do when you get out of class, you go to the bathroom. Okay, right? That's what you do. All right, I'm not, you don't need to know this, but I went to the bathroom. And if you, I mean, Niagara Falls. Oh, it was, you talk about swimming. I was swimming on my overturned island. I said, oh my gosh, here we go again. Here we go again. Mamish, oh. I feel sorry for myself. It was a long time ago. Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. Have you ever met Rabbi Einemer? Have you met Rabbi Einemer? You never met him. Your father, Alana, knows him. You remember his... So after what seemed like about 6 days, but was probably about 4 minutes, I said, you know, I can't live here. I did begin contemplating whether, you know, there was water here, you know, you can live for a while with water, safety, but you can't live forever in a bathroom. So I said, I got to go to the office. And then this is where I davened. It can't be Rabbi Einemer, because he really, and I wanted the principal. By Feldman, he was more, you know, easy to talk to. It's not good, but so you know how you like you wipe your face and you just hopefully that's not you're just making it worse. And my mascara was different story. different story. Anyway, I was just so so I start walking. Hashem had a plan because Rabbi Feldman was nowhere to be found, and Rabbi Einemer. Alav Hashalom. He was a tremendous Talmid Chacham and a founder of the Jewish community in Silver Spring and the mikvahs and the kashrut was all him and this yeshiva. And he's there. And he says, what seems to be the problem? And he didn't really talk like that, but he seemed like he did. And I said, you know, you have to like muster all your courage in ninth grade. And I go, Rabbi Drillman asked me to leave Shir. He gets up and he puts his arm around me, like, you know. He puts his arm around me and he says, come, let's go. And I knew that there was some kind of torture chamber somewhere in that building that where guys, you know, it's a unique place only for people who get kicked out in the first 10 minutes of high school. I said, I mean, I don't know where he's taking me, to the front door, to the garbage chute. I was like really scared and who knows, and I kept saying, here we go again, and here we go again. We walk straight to Rabbi Drillman's office. To Rabbi Drillman's classroom. Classroom's still going on. It's only 16 minutes into class. It's not that much. We walk into Rabbi Drillman's class. Opens the door. Everybody, of course, stands up. I don't think it was for me. I think it was for Rabbi Einemer at the time. Still not sure, but everybody stands up and looks. That's Rabbi Einemer. And there's Shorty. They didn't call me that. And like, this is going to be like public flogging or something. Why? He wanted to hear the story maybe, or he says, Rabbi Drillman, do you think you could give this boy another chance? A boat, a lifesaver. My island turned back over in 2.5 seconds. I told him many times, Hakara Tatov. He didn't write anything down. There's no permanent record. He said, "Could you think you could give this boy another chance?" A gentleman said, oh, "You know, of course, yes." Now I'm going to tell the following part of the story, only for the sake of education. Not for any other reason, for me. And it's very hard in life. Life is real. Life is not Hollywood. Life is not a movie. But for me, that it's very rare to have a point in your life that you literally can see. Usually it takes some time to look back. This is not common. For me, it was. For me, it happened. That literally was a turning point for me. How am I going to react to this? I didn't know the Gemara. But I said, that was what I needed. and I'm going to share with you for the sake of the story, is that literally from that day on, almost never before, and basically every day since, I said, I'm doing this. I'm making this happen. There's no choice. I'm making this happen. And I became, 4 years later, the valedictorian of my class. It's a miracle. I feel that I was placed in the right time. It was Rabbi Einemer. It was Rabbi Drillman. I'm going to say it was me also. It was. I made a choice that time versus the previous 999 times. And I think that is a lesson that one can walk away with from this parsha, and with many parshiots, and with life in general. We all think we're on an island and everything's fine. And sometimes things don't go our way. And sometimes roads are closed. We find ourselves swimming and drowning. If you're near the boat could be friends. The boat could be teachers. The boat is always family. The boat is always close friends and close family. Always. The boat is Torah. The boat is our sages before us. If we're near that boat, we will surely, surely not drown. May come close, but we will surely not drown. But we've got to swim to that boat. We've got to keep it close. We've got to swim. You can't blame anybody else, and maybe not even credit. But with my parents' help, and with my friends' help, and with my teacher's help, and with this and that, I can make a turn. And we can become a Levi, and at least in this case, not become a Shimon. Have a lot of time, everybody.